Alan Coleman, 25, 12 defeats to Leeds. Although you lost the game, you must be proud of how your team performed.
Yeah, proud. Definitely proud, but gutted. You know, we focused all week on about being the best of us, and in the first half, James, I thought we weren't. Sounds crazy. We was at 68%. You know, losing ball on tackle three, tackle four, tackle three, tackle four. And, you know, we can't do that. You know, if you do it in our own combo struggle, and against the quality outfit as Leeds. And so I was really disappointed in that. Obviously, we got some good, we got in some good areas for some good play. So that doesn't worry me. It's just we've got to be better. And half time, we focused on being better. And I thought we were much better, keeping hold of the ball, respecting the ball. They weren't for long periods of time where they got nothing on us, basically. So, yeah, really proud. And we'll learn a lot from that.
Because I suppose their first try, either side of that first try, and you had a lot of decent pressure on their line, just couldn't get over the line on the first case. But you did get through the second one with that smart kick by Nathan Connell for Mike Buck.
Yeah, great vision. We spoke before the game saying our options have got to be right and we've got to choose the right ones. So we've got to look up, keep focused, keep looking up. And Nathan's getting better and better at that. And that's a typical forte, you know, eyes up, looked up, nobody there, kicked through. Had the belief in his execution and Mike Butt was there to finish it. And we had lots of opportunities in good ball against them, lots, you know. And I could go back, passing wasn't great, you know, from dummy half or just probably our depth and our positional. And we'd have had more options and more opportunities. But it is what it is. You've got to get in them positions. And I was really pleased with how we got to them positions.
At 6-0, they took a penalty goal, which perhaps showed a bit of respect from them of how well you'd played in that opening quarter of the game.
Yeah, we knew that. We said all week that if we're the best witness can be, we'll cause them problems. And I thought we did. And it's just nice when you've got a quality team like Leeds coming in and showing you so much respect, with, you know, with the penalty goal and also the drop goal from Bodie Croft. So, it's a pat on the back for our boys. But like I said, we're disappointed because we left some points out there, which is disappointing for me.
They scored two tries at the end of the first half where you could see they were picking out a few tired bodies and Jared O'Connor and Bodie Croft was zipping around 18-6 half-time. I think I pointed out on the commentary at half-time, you were trailing to Warrington last year in the Cup and fought back in the second half. And, you know, you tried to do your best this time. Leeds started the second half really strongly, but after you'd saw them out the first few sets, you really got yourselves back into the game.
Yeah, well, that was the talk. You know, we've been in this position before last year. Warrington, you know, had a brilliant 10 minutes before our time, got in front, and then we said, let's regroup and let's start the second half. They're going to come at us 100 mile an hour, already finished. Let's soak it up, let's absorb it, and then when we get opportunities, let's take them. I thought we did brilliantly. And I just think, you know, they're a championship team and they know the ins and outs and they know how the referee works. That's a big thing. They had a good game, by the way, and I just think they just got us in key parts where we really struggled. But what I was pleased with, we focused on getting to tackle six as much as possible for Jordan's kicking game, and it worked massively, and that was the big difference in the second half.
I mean, when you got it back to 18-12, you could almost feel the crowd sense that maybe you could, and just a shame, you had 6-7 minutes of it at 18-12, and then they got a little bit of a lucky break, didn't they, off the offload. I mean, fair play to Riley Lum, it was a great solo try that he scored in the end, but just maybe that ball bounces in a different way, it might have been something different.
Yeah, you know, I think our offloads didn't quite work for us and theirs did for them, and we've got a few bodies in there who've identified that we're probably a bit disappointed we could have made them tackles, but we can't be too hard on ourselves at times. You know, that the actual physical side of it was similar to what we used to, but the speed aspect was a lot more advanced, so it's going to take its toll, and you run on an empty at times. And some of my boys with 5 interchanged at half time, not through our choice but no fault of our own, so it was vital. You know, I asked lads to dig in and they did, and that's when you fall off. So yeah, effort wise really proud, but you know, if we could loop back, which we will do, we'd probably be disappointed but proud in the same breath.
What happened with Jack Owens? I know he came off just for our time. He didn't look too happy with coming off, but it didn't seem to go down as a HIA, even though it was a cut on the head. What happened there?
No, so basically he's got to run back, so you can't do an HIA. It's all the physio saying, so he came and he was bleeding quite extensively. So she's made the call, which is, you know, I back her decision on that. But then obviously treatment's at half time and he's good to go. But we made a call not to do it. You know, Morgan and Max were comfortable at the time. We've got a big game next week. And then in the last 5-6 minutes, you know, we're trying to throw the last dice and have a go. We wanted to get over. We were desperate to get over for another try. And I just put him on as an extra half. He played at 13 and he just played side by side, which we did. And we got some opportunities and he wanted to go back out there. So, yeah, that was the decision behind that.
I think Jackson Hastings tweeted that Adam Lawton should have played a lot more Super League than he has. He played with him at Salford. He had a great game after you brought him on. And that break in the second half really set you up for the try.
Yeah, as long as he don't keep kicking ball, I'll be fine. But no, he's been good for us. It's good to have him back. There's loads of bits where he punishes himself. You know, he's pulling after the game. I didn't do this. I didn't. No, you didn't. But he did some fantastic things also. And he's good for us. He's a secret weapon, and I think Morgan McWhirter is becoming that weapon as well for us. And our starting middles is tremendous today, I thought. And got Gregson to come back. Lewis Hall's done 50 of 60 minutes today, which is really good to see. You know, we're looking elsewhere as well, which is vital for us as a club. And slowly but surely, you know, we'll get bodies back. And as soon as Wildy's back and Edge's back and Jemai's back, you know, it's a real competitive squad.
What's the latest with those in terms of time scale?
Jemai, fingers crossed, will be fine next week. Edge's probably one more week. Probably be cautious and wait for Oldham. But Matt Fleming was brilliant today, by the way, I thought. So them two, Wildy's about 5 weeks, which is good news because we thought it was worse. Nick Gregson should be fine next week. Benty's obviously having an operation. Frank Sargent should be running in 2 weeks. Gilmore's back available. Well, he's available, so he'll probably maybe look at Tom.
Can I just ask you one last thing before you let go? There's been a lot of comment about part-time teams playing full-time Super League. There was a lot of one-sided scores yesterday. I mean, I think Casford only beat Doncaster 40-0 today, and you know, obviously you've given Leeds a good game. What's your take on how the Challenge Cup's set up, and should the part-time teams play the Super League team?
Well, as a coach, you want to pick your wits against quality players and quality coaches. As a player, it's no different. Scorelines doesn't really matter, the scoreline. It's about the occasion, how you could deliver it, how your players deliver on their performance, what they get from it, what's important. What is important is you play it, and you play to the best you can be against the best you can go against. And I just think you start taking that away from the game, the magic's gone already. And you know, we played Thatweef and the scoreline was one-sided, but you know, the financial side of it they made, the experience they made, the occasion they made, it's just, it will improve the player pool, it'll improve the spectator pool, it'll improve the club in general. And I think it'll do that for every club. You know, you speak to Workington last night in Lot Lane, they'll be over the moon with that occasion. Let's not lose that magic. And I think it's good what they do where the Super League clubs travel. I think it's really important. And you saw last year with us with Warrington. And so, yeah, no, I'm all for that. It's a great occasion.
So that was Alan Coleman after the Widnes defeat to Leeds in the Challenge Cup. A spirited effort by Widnes against, albeit an understrength Leeds, although worth noting that Widnes 2 were without 3 or 4 of what you would call the strongest 13. Mike's with me as ever. Mike, what were your thoughts on the match?
Second time in 2 weeks where, to be honest, Alan Coleman's interview, I'm with him, I agree with it, and I really liked it in fairness. I liked the fact that he mentioned the 60% completion rate at times in the first half, and the way the game went, come the end of the game, you couldn't help but walk away and think about the if, buts and maybes. If you just hadn't have done this, you just hadn't have done that. I think the only concern for me really, though, was, you know, again, like the London game in particular springs to mind, where one-on-one tackles did cost us. But of course, like Alan said, you know, the speed, the intensity, the pace of the game, it obviously takes its toll and takes things out of players that obviously spectators can't see. But I think in terms of the positives, there was positives all over the show. You know, I thought both wingers was outstanding, to be quite honest. I thought Ryan Ince defensively had Ryan Hall in his back pocket, which was really pleasing to see, because I'd been concerned, would we see Ryan back to his best? He seems to be lacking a bit of confidence, certainly going forward. But, you know, he put in a sterling performance defensively. Mike Butt, you know, I've been a little bit critical of him in the past of, You know, he needs to get over that try line a little bit more. But again, you know, took his two chances really well. Jordan Abdul, I mean, what can we say about him? No, just great to see him playing with a smile on his face. And, you know, it was nice to see him test himself against a Super League team and obviously prove to himself he can still operate at a high level against high-level opposition. You know, there's no hiding from the fact that he can turn a poor set into a good set. And I think at times on Saturday, he gave Widnes a lifeline in a lot of situations where, you know, we were struggling to get out of our own half. You know, the forwards were starting to gas a little bit. And next thing you know, he's launched a 70-yard kick and it gives everyone a lift and you're trapping leads in their own end. And if you can transfer that into the Championship, you know, like we've said already, it's a massive weapon for Widnes to have. But I think the two players who stood out for me, James, was Adam Lawton. I mean, zero to hero, really. I was a little bit critical in the player ratings after the North Wales Crusaders game. I think you mentioned and alluded to the fact of Widnes players getting drawn into that battle and, you know, with that, you know, penalties being conceded. And I think Adam was one of them players guilty of that. Well, you flip that on its head and, you know, Christ, he's shown what he was capable of. He was rolling back the years and, crikey, I felt sorry for the younger Leeds fullback because he was travelling when he broke that line. And I think he'll be grateful, the young fullback, that he decided to kick it. And Matty Fozard was shouting to kick it because I think if he'd have made contact, he'd have gone straight over the poor lad.
Well, Alan, just on that, while you mentioned it, I was surprised Alan Coleman was critical of him kicking it. I thought that was the right call. I didn't think it was a bad kick either, to be honest. It was just that, you know, Leeds had men faster catching, faster chasing back.
Yeah. And I think just quickly to finish off, James, before you jump in, I think the man of the moment, and I'm glad he walked away with man of the match, was Morgan McWhirter. I think just quickly for me, without going over old territory of what other people have said this week, for me, he is a much better player this year. He's a different beast. He looks like he's bulked up a bit. He looks fitter. He looks quicker. And for my mind, he is better than just being a 20-minute interchange on and off the pitch. I think he has to play back row or loose forward. For me, it'd be loose forward. I think he's shown a bit of everything. He can, you know, obviously cart the ball in and play it safe when we need to. He can dig in defence. He put a little kick through late in the second half. He was working his way into that first receiving role. For me, I'd love to see him start loose forward, but whether it's loose forward or back row, I think going forward, he has to be on the pitch longer for Widnes.
Well, I mean, I think with McWhirter is ultimately Widnes have to show him a bit of love, because if you want to keep players like that, you know, I'm sure there'd be other clubs interested in him. You know, he's made no secret when he came on the podcast with us that he wants to play in Super League. And I'm sure his performances so far this season will give him enough evidence that someone might have a punt on him in Super League. I think in terms of my thoughts on the game, I thought if Tom Gilmore had been playing, I think Widnes might have been able to make a bit more of them early chances they had. There was a lot of the passing to the right was breaking down quite often in them early exchanges. You mentioned Abdul's kicking. I think Leeds knocked on three times in their own 20, and that was all off the back of a kick from Abdul, just putting them under a slight bit of pressure where they probably defensively had a good set, and then all of a sudden the fullback's having to scamper back for the ball and they're thinking, oh, I'm only going to get to the 20 here, even though they've kicked from inside their 30, we're only going to get back to the 20. I was pleased that Butt got the first try when he did, because that would have been a killer if, because Widnes had a lot of pressure before Leeds' first try, then they had a lot of pressure after Leeds' first try. If they'd have not scored, that would have really put a dent in things, but they did. Them two tries Leeds scored just before half-time, I was worried for Widnes at that point, because the manner of the tries, I thought Jared O'Connor had a good game.
I know that Leeds are full time, but just the way they picked out static defenders and a bit of a staggered defensive line and were able to weave in and out at that time, it looked like clearly Widnes were tiring at that point and Leeds went 18-6 and you're thinking, I mean, the psychology of Watkins missing the goal and keeping it at 18-6 rather than 20-6 possibly had an impact on Widnes, because I thought for the first 20 minutes of the second half, I thought Widnes were really good. There was a spell where Leeds put Widnes under quite a bit of pressure, but Widnes didn't buckle. And then the game got into a bit of a stalemate where both sides were completing. Neither was really getting into great ball position. But actually, I felt at that point, a stalemate was good for Widnes, because I thought that if it opened up, Leeds would have ran riot a little bit. Whereas because Widnes kept in the fight in that period, and they've proven at various times over the last couple of years that they are capable of that. And then when they got the try back to go 18-12, the crowd really got up. You could sense there was a little bit of belief in Widnes where they were like, hang on, we're working hard and we're chiseling away at Leeds here. And I'm sure Leeds were worried for a little spell. And they got a bit of a lucky break with the offload. And then it was a good try by, you know, some poor tackling, I guess, but it was a good finish by Riley Lum. And that killed the game. It's a shame that the game couldn't have gone on a bit longer, you know, 5 minutes longer at 18-12, just to see what might have happened. But I think all in all, to only lose 25-12, and I know people will say Leeds were missing X, Y, and Z, but they're still ultimately full-time players. They played pretty much their starting pack played in the game. Brody Croft obviously played. You know, I think it was a more than credible display by Widnes, especially in the context of some of the comments from people about Super League teams shouldn't play Championship teams and the one-sided scores and stuff like that.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, actually, James, because before kickoff, I had that conversation of, you know, Doncaster playing Castleford, York playing Barrow, London playing Bradford, and of course ourselves. I think that Saturday/Sunday was really important to get a little bit of respect back for the Championship and obviously the amateur teams, given what happened on Friday night with some of them score lines. So I think watching my team put in that performance against your Cameron Smith, your Michael Ioleskis, your Ryan Halls, your Callum Watkins, your Brody Crofts, who was, I'll be honest, Brody Croft for me was fantastic. He really was. And to, you know, that's one thing I miss these days. Now it's rare I get to a Super League game live. You have a bit more of a luxury than what I do, James, obviously with your commentary, but watching a play like Brody Croft live, I mean, wow, he was brilliant. And, you know, Widnes, it was a proud performance for Widnes, and, you know, one that certainly made me proud. And, you know, I think the most pleasing part for me was, like you said, when it went to 18-6, that could have been Widnes's excuse to knock down tools, literally, but, you know, throw the towel in, as in, like, we've had enough. But the fact we went under the post and we went again, we didn't go away. But I think what's important now is, let's not forget, we was in a very similar situation to this last year, and we was having very similar conversations about that Warrington game, if not a little bit more so, with Warrington, with the size of the crowd, obviously the rivalry as well. But for Widnes now, it is important. And we said this last year, and unfortunately, the season went another way a little bit once we'd said that. But it is imperative now that Widnes focus on Workington, and then you focus on Oldham, and actually raise your levels and go, this is the bar we need to be at. And obviously, you're not going to maintain that all the time. But we can't have this massive dip between that being our best and performances like Toulouse, then serving up something like we did against Doncaster with 11 men. Like, that cannot happen this year now. We've got to close that gap in performances.
We touched upon it last week. Where the game is going at the moment, and we'll touch upon the Halifax situation a bit later on, I think we're closer than ever now to the door to Super League being shut and there being a clear separation between Super League and the rest. And it's imperative, in my opinion, that Widnes now have got to become a dominant force in the Championship. Forget about London Broncos, if you like. They'll win the league this year. But Widnes have got to show that they're next in line on the pitch, because I think that is the only way that they're going to be able to be taken seriously and have a credible. I don't think Widnes got away with it when they got put into Super League last time, where they finished fifth and got in. Featherstone beat Widnes by 40 points on two occasions, and yet it was Widnes that got up into Super League. I don't think Widnes will be fortunate enough to have that luxury again. So I think the only way that Widnes get in, yeah, of course, you've got to have the off-field stuff sorted out. But if Super League decides to go to 16 teams and 1 and 2 in the Championship are London and Widnes, I think it's almost next to impossible for them to overlook Widnes for anybody else. But if Widnes are chilling down in 6th, 7th place, then there's the perfect excuse to say, actually, we don't think Widnes should be in Super League. And I think that, as much as, yeah, you've got to think about week to week and stuff, the long-term plan of the club or the long-term feasibility of the club has got to be so ingrained now on competing at the top level of this league. They've taken the three best teams from last year out of it. The three teams that finished above Widnes last season have all got money problems. You know, Featherstone and Halifax Featherstone have disappeared for the year. Halifax look to be going that way. Oldham are now moving games away from Boundary Park because their money man's had enough of putting the cash in. So if Widnes are serious about progressing up, they've got to show that. And if not, then I think it's a resignation to being a part-time club for forever. And if that's the case, then that's the case. But I just feel that bubbling, the way things are moving in rugby league at the moment. I just feel that that's the situation.
I totally agree with everything you've just said. And just to add with that, I think them expectations need to be put into place on the field now. We're obviously talking about Super League applications from last year because we applied. Now, I believe to make it happen off the field, we've got everything in place in terms of the right people doing the right roles. For me now, you're right, that has to be the case. Widnes have to be performing at the top of this division now. There are no excuses for all the reasons that you have just said. Well, for me now, this year, top four is a minimum for me in this league, if not higher. And, you know, that might sound straight to the point, but if I was a board of director this year now, I'd be judging my performance team, my team that I've recruited, doing that, because we cannot sit forever, like you've just said, applying for Super League, finishing 6th or 7th. That doesn't match the ambition of what's being said in that application. So therefore, that simply can't happen this year. And I have said, like, that I really do want it to work for Alan and his team. I really do. But this has to be the year where it's delivered on the field, and not just delivered on the field, just like convincingly.
Well, take Nigel Wood, the Nigel Wood situation. Take Nigel Wood out of the equation and his involvement in the RFL and his previous involvement in Bradford. If Widnes had finished 3rd last season and Bradford had finished 7th and they put Bradford in Super League over Widnes, there would have been a lot more, well, for want of a better word, kicking off about it.
The publicity, wouldn't there?
Do you know what I mean? If Widnes, because ultimately Toulouse are in because they won the grand final. If Toulouse hadn't won the grand final, London Broncos would have been in.
Yeah.
And people can say what they want about IMG scores, this, whatever. That's what happened. And I just think if you're, you know, I've said to it about Oldham are in the discussion because they were 4th last season. If they were 7th or 8th, no one would have been mentioning them. They've been in the third tier for 15 of the last 20 years, you know, and I think, and straight away, Oldham, they've gone in, they've said no, and all of a sudden it's fallen apart straight away. They've not got enough fans, et cetera, et cetera. So, it goes without saying, don't get me wrong, I don't suppose Alan Coleman's not trying to win every game. Don't get me wrong, but I think now there's got to be a little bit more of a focus on that. Let's just have a bit of a chinwag about the attendance, Mike, because there was a few scratched heads about the attendance. There was a bit of a disparity between the announced figures and what it felt like in the crowd. It certainly didn't feel like there was 1,200 less people for the Leeds match than there was against North Wales Crusaders.
No, that was my observation to you, mate. Of course, I sit in the north stand, so I can't look into myself until, you know, I see highlights and videos, and quite often the camera to that's on our side. But that south stand didn't, considering there were 500 Leeds fans there, or there was 500 tickets put to them, however many Leeds fans was there, there was a decent amount of them. To, all right, you know, you can take maybe more Leeds fans and slightly less Widnes fans compared to last week. But I must admit, when that attendance figure come out, I was thinking either there wasn't 4,000 there last week or there was more than 2,900 there this week. That was my observation.
Well, my thought process is that there probably wasn't 4,000 against North Wales Crusaders. I think that probably counted a number of people, whether it be free season ticket holders or season ticket holders who weren't there. Do I think there was more than that for the Leeds game? Possibly, maybe a couple of hundred more. But yeah, listen, 3,000 I think is a decent barometer for Widnes to, if Widnes can get around or above 3,000 every week, I think that's a solid attendance number. I've been working on a piece regarding the North Stand because I know there's been a few question marks about that. It's not fully open as yet, albeit they had to move the netting for the Crusaders game to fit everybody in. And I know that there's a little bit of a campaign to get the northwest corner back open. We have touched upon this in the past where I've actually spoke to the council and they've explained the costs, etc. They save 800 quid or something like that by not opening the northwest corner. And by the sounds of it, I think it's almost not an unlikely dream, but unless all of a sudden 3,000 more people are going to turn up, opening the northwest corner doesn't seem practical, because the main issue with opening the northwest corner is you obviously have to open an additional concourse. Now, my throwing this into the fire is, could the northwest corner not become the northeast corner? I don't know anyone who stands in the northwest corner, by the way, but because of the nature of the north stand and the way that it's laid out, I'm fairly sure that they could open the northeast corner pretty easily, or with a bare number more fans. And yeah, of course, long term, you want the whole stand to. I assume the northwest corner was once popular because the away fans used to sit in the west stand. Well, nobody sits in the west stand anymore. So, yeah, that's my suggestion for the week. Does the northwest corner become the northeast corner?
It's possible.
Did they just sit alongside the netting and bang the drum?
Maybe. I'm not going to join you on that one because I'd have to sit in the north stand, mate. So I'll be getting drilled for that one. But no, I think where we're up to, and the realism of it is, we are far off from that north stand being fully open. You know, Tim, it's his burning desire. It's Alan's burning desire to fill the north stand. But we are where we are. And unfortunately, at the moment, through multiple of different reasons, you know, it can't be open. And I'd love it to be one day and everybody, then this conversation is irrelevant. But I just, for me personally, for the people that make up that corner, that group, I think they're loud enough where they are, and like, it's nice for them to be central in the north stand, because obviously, you know, as it is, you know, the rest of the ground's empty, so you want them as close as possible and people to be as close together as possible so the sound can then go out on the pitch. Whereas even if that North Stand was fully open at the moment, I don't think it's going to have too much bearing on attendances at the moment. And I think what you get is just an even flatter atmosphere because people are more spread out. That's my thought process at the moment. But of course, you know, the plan is and the ambition is to grow the attendances. So I suppose it is a case of everybody, if that's everybody's end goal, we've just got to keep working at it, haven't we? And there's just no other answer really at the moment.
How are you getting on with your Viking ingots, Mike? Have you collected any yet?
I haven't, to be fair. I did say to Tim, I'm quite envy of this idea because if it was socially acceptable, I probably would.
I would like to see you go up to Jordan Abbey on that one.
But no, I think it's a great idea, mate. I think you quite liked the idea as well, didn't you? When it first got launched properly.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've mentioned the trading cards thing before, and I've seen from experience what it does in terms of fan engagement. And I think Widnes are seeing a little bit of that. It's only the start of it, and they're seeing quite some positives. My son didn't get any at the weekend, but he's got a Jordan Abdul one. That's the only one he's got, I think, so far. So I think he was a bit miffed. He didn't get any actually on the weekend, so he might need to get down to the front a bit quicker, I think.
Does he sit in the North Stand?
Yeah, he sits in the North, yeah.
Because I think some of the players was giving him out in the bridge suite at the end.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether maybe that was because I don't know whether the previous week they'd give out a load to the North Stand and they didn't. Because certainly I obviously stayed behind a bit after the game, sat in my seat in the South Stand, and certainly they were giving them out to the very last dregs of people who were in the South Stand. So, listen, there's plenty of games and opportunities to get there. Unfortunately, by the looks of things, there's going to be two less games, albeit only one at home, because of the situation with Halifax, who suddenly were just liquidated this week. None of this administration capers. They were just straight off liquidated, a debt to HMRC. Widnes are due to play them at home on the 26th of April. The away game at the Shea was due to be on the 16th of August, so you might be able to book a summer holiday now and not miss a match. There's been a bit of talk about, is a replacement club going to be set up to replace them? But I just can't see how that happens when it's not happened with Featherstone. It's not been a lot. And I know the argument was that Featherstone had the similar sort of people involved, but I just don't see how the RFL can get away with a club liquidating because the OHMRC and then a new club just starting tomorrow and taking their place and cracking on. I just don't see how that, unless, of course, the new club's going to find a way of paying off the debt.
Yeah.
I think probably the surprise is that we haven't seen a situation like what Widnes went through where you go into administration and there's the opportunity to sell off assets and make some money and, you know, raise some money. I guess that's the surprising element. And just before, you know, I hand the floor to you, Mike, the only other thing that might lean in Halifax's favour is that the game this week's been called off already, but they don't have a game next week, so at least gives them a little bit of a window to try and sort something out. But as things stand, all their players are being released, they're all available for other clubs, and it's another blow to the Championship. Because listen, with all due respect to some of the clubs that are in the Championship, you're not just losing any old clubs. Featherstone and Halifax are two of the best supported clubs, two of the most successful clubs in the Championship, and certainly two clubs that probably all of the Yorkshire clubs certainly would probably rely on to bring fans.
I totally agree, certainly with your last point. You know, two very historical clubs. I did notice just before coming on, actually, that Halifax was due the bye after this week, which does give them a little bit of time. But like you say, James, it looks a tough ask, and there's obviously a lot that goes into them meetings and conversations that'll be happening now that we just don't understand, certainly myself. So yeah, it very much does look season over, but I think on reflection, and I have thought about this the last day or two, especially with what's happened with what's happened with Featherstone as well, I looked at the league table and I think the teams in the Championship, look, you've got Gull Vikings there and Midlands Hurricanes, which I don't really like to count because they've not been around long enough. But I think in my lifetime, there's only two or three Championship clubs in that list that haven't had money problems in my lifetime. And I'm 28, which is quite alarming, really. And I think it, as much as, you know, it's a shame and we can speak about that, we also need to speak about the state of the game in the Championship, life below Super League and what needs to be done. I think it was Derek Beaumont who, and rightly so, you know, to try and get to the Super League and bridge that gap, and, well, promotion and relegation was on the cards, lifted the salary cap. And you have got to allow there to be room for a team to progress. But for me now, I'm looking at the umpteen examples there are of teams overspending. I just don't see a second tier without a salary cap being put into place to stop this type of thing. Because if we're being brutal and straight to the point, Featherstone historically for years and years clearly overspent and went above the means. Whitehaven did with the, you know, overseas players. Newcastle did go into full-time, tried it. Oldham, I strongly believe, they're going to be pulling in their purse strings already. You know, the list is endless. The list is endless. And I think ultimately the RFL now, of course, need to be looking at the Halifax situation and working with them. But they also need to put something in place to make the Championship sustainable, because, you know, I know for a fact, you know, a player has been offered a contract at a Championship club that plays trains two nights a week and once on a Sunday, and it's in the region of £35,000, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, the player, we, you know, I know of a player earning 50k.
Not at a
top club either. The player wages have just got out of hand for what I think. I've had a few conversations with a few people this week. I think the problem stems from the fact that professional rugby league is badged as this one thing. So they're saying that there's 30, however many there are now, 30 odd professional clubs. And that's, of course, because since the dawn of time, rugby league, the reason it's called rugby league is that there was a one league of 30 odd clubs. Now, the situation is vastly different to when that existed. And I think what annoys me so much is I see people all the time saying, oh, well, we need to get rid of these clubs. No, we don't need to get rid of these clubs. We need to create a degree of separation between Super League and the rest of the game. Now, I'm a massive advocate of promotion and relegation, and I always will be. But it's increasingly getting to the point now where Super League is Super League, but there's this thing where they think that they're carrying the baggage of these 20 clubs. They shouldn't be judged as part of that same setup, if you know what I mean. Like, yeah, okay, there's 14 teams in Super League now, but the rest of the clubs should be easily able to exist in whatever league they see fit. Now, I think part of the problem has been, like you say, the salary cap got removed. There should be a salary cap in the Championship, in my opinion, to try and prevent this sort of thing happening. But of course, if you put a salary cap in, that raises questions over whether you can have promotion and relegation, because of course, no one in Championship is going to be able to compete in Super League off a Championship salary cap the following season. Now, you could say, well, did he bring it back so you do promotion, the grand final is in July, like when Widnes first went up, just to give teams a little bit more to build. That's another argument. But I think the issue is that there needs to be a reset. At the moment, the game's just ploughed on for 10 years probably, and it's had these problems for 10 years, and it's just sort of ploughed on and ploughed on. And I wonder now whether we are, as I mentioned earlier, I wonder whether we are now heading to, there'll be a full-time league, Super League, that's a closed shop, and then they'll leave everyone else in the part-time league. And listen, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I think there needs to be, I actually think now, and I know that they're doing loads of stuff in the community game at the moment, changing things. It's like in football, you don't talk about professional football clubs and non-professional. Yeah, you have the football league and non-league, but you're never saying nobody ever says, oh, there's too many non-league clubs, it's holding back the Football League clubs. Or you don't hear, oh, there's not enough Premier League clubs, it's holding back the Football League clubs. You don't hear any. There should be able to be as many rugby league teams as there wants to be. If there's 40 clubs who want to be in the semi-pro tiers, they should be able to have 40 clubs in there. But I think everyone's caught up on this, like, oh, they're taking money out of the centre, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas the issue is all these clubs need to get down to a level where they're more sustainable than they are now. And I think part of that is play. I think somebody tweeted me a really good example of Halifax, like the costs of Halifax to play at the Shea, because they don't own the ground. By the time they've paid the rent on that, it's hard work for them to generate revenue. So where on earth does the money come from to pay such big salaries to players to train? Ultimately, they should be paying players a few hundred quid a week. That's the bottom line, because that's what it is. They're training two nights a week, playing on a Sunday. It's just, how do you get from the point where you are now to a more realistic level? I'm not sure. Whether it's going to take more clubs going to the wall, I don't know.
I think we have got to that point where everybody realises it now, but I think it's just so scary, you know, some of these models that have been put in place, lasted a couple of years and gone, what impact it's actually had. And apart from the odd clubs like Batley, Dewsbury, another example, you know, what that does is when sides are in the part-time game paying 50k for a player and stuff, you know, the sides underneath that are trying to compete, yeah, it forces them to go, hang on, we'll take a gamble on a player. And then before you know it, their playing budgets have gone up, and that's the knock-on effect it has.
Toronto was a prime example, is they just started offering players silly money to tempt them to go over there, because otherwise, why would a player go and play there? And then all of a sudden, when they then, like, take Craig Hall, for instance, Toronto paying Craig Hall a fortune to play there. So when he finishes at Toronto, how much money do you think he's going to be asking for? He's going to be asking for as much as he was on at Toronto, because that's what he was used to getting. And, yeah, I don't know how.
The model of a part-time rugby club really should be a Batley, shouldn't it? Really?
Yeah, but therein lies the issue. I think the biggest issue for rugby league is fewer and fewer clubs have got their own ground.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest issue. Batley are an example of one that, you know, Dewsbury, them clubs have got control of their own ground. They can probably sustain being a non-Super League, let's call them non-Super League. They can sustain being a non-Super League club because they've got their own facilities. Where, you know, I look at, like, I spoke to the North Wales Crusaders coach the other day. They train in Wigan, right? So they play at Colwyn Bay. So they just go on Colwyn Bay on a weekend and play. Where's the sense of community in that? Midlands Hurricanes, they train in Huddersfield, and then they go and play in somewhere in Birmingham now on a Sunday. It's like, them clubs are no bigger than Thatweave Crusaders.
No, they're not. 100%. Totally agree with you. And there's no legacy in it either, because how do you build a club around that? How do you inspire your next generation where there's just no access to them apart from 2 hours on a Sunday?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think, you know, so Thatweave Crusaders are bigger than them clubs. And yet there's this, we talk about levels between, we've moaned for years, well, not moaned for years, but when they had licensing, we talked about this glass ceiling from the Championship to the Super League. But there's almost a glass ceiling from the community clubs to the Championship. But Batley is a community club just as much as Thatweave is. And I just don't see now why that can't be opened up. And people won't like this because people want Widnes to be playing Wigan, and I get that. But for the betterment of the game, I just think now you've got to be opening up the part-time teams to look underneath. I think that's a better way of creating something that thrives. Going back to the stadium thing, the only saving grace for Widnes, and I know Widnes don't own their own ground, but ultimately, without the rugby, the stadium is a nothing. And that is that's the difference between Widnes and, say, Halifax. Because, you know, ultimately that's the football ground, isn't it? Now, I'd love to be able to get in and plan it all out. I really would. And I don't know what will happen. But ultimately, what's happened to Featherstone and Halifax is a consequence of all this nonsense with licensing and IMG. It's been moving the deck chairs around and not actually looking at real stuff that goes on. Like, you can show whatever you want on a spreadsheet or however many video views you've got, but the reality of what these clubs have got and where they sit in their communities, you know, we'll move on to Workington now. Widnes are at Workington on Sunday. Workington played St. Helens. They got, what was it, 4,000? They got more money from that match than they get in central funding.
Yeah, but I believe I read it might be a loose comment, but in and around, they've paid the wage bill for about 3 months.
Yeah, so they got more. Now, that's fine. I remove central funding. If central funding is cut, because the thing is Super League fans or Super League people or media people, whatever, they go on about, oh, well, the game can't afford to prop up all these clubs. And it's like, well, how much money are they giving them anyway? They're not giving them a great deal. Is that money that they're saving, let's say they stop giving funding to the championship clubs, that would probably only save £1 million. So is that £1 million really going to move the needle when it comes to Super League? I don't think it is. But I might... Some of them League One clubs are practically exist, or the old League One clubs are practically existing on next to no central funding anyway. So I'm a bit like, well, let's work to get rid of it. So then all of a sudden then when you're saying there's 40 teams, well, it doesn't cost any more to have 40 teams than just to have 20, because nobody gets any central funding. And that's the only way I think.
And really, James, nobody should be relying on central funding. You know, any business should be able to stand on their own 2 feet.
And that's another reason I think why the game has got to where it is, because a lot and super, I include Super League clubs in this, got complacent with the central funding because they knew they were getting £1.5 million a year, or in the championship they were getting however much. They knew they could run the club without investing in anything. They knew they could run and exist. You know, Wakefield, Castleford, prime example of teams who competed in Super League year in, year out. They were getting £1.5 million, didn't do anything to the ground, and then all of a sudden it was like, shit's hit the fan, what are we going to do? Whereas you look at, say, Featherstone, they did all that improvement to the ground. They didn't have anywhere near as much central funding as Wakefield and Castleford, yet they were able to do all this work. And I just think, you know, there's countless examples of clubs who just became reliant on the central funding. And Rugby League probably didn't know how good it had it when it was getting all that. Well, that's never coming back now. And I, as much as people say Super Duper, well, ultimately, Sky pay the money to show Super League. They pay the money to show Wigan versus, you know, Warrington versus Saints on Friday night sellout. That's what Sky are paying for. They're not paying, with all due respect, for Widnes to go and play at Batley. You know, and so I think we are now at the point where ultimately Super League is what Sky are paying for. That's maybe where the money should stay. And don't get me wrong, there should be a drip feeding down to the wider game, but not on a per club basis. That should be more about developing player pools or getting development officers in. That's how I would run it. And I'm sure there'd be championship clubs who are thinking, oh, well, we need that 50K. And it's like, well, maybe spend 50K less on players until you can generate that money back.
There's an opening at the RFL, isn't there, going, James? Have you replied? Put your CV in.
I don't think I'm unemployable, me, Mike, unfortunately. that's where I'm at. But yeah, I mean, I'm not there this weekend. Workington, they've had a bit of a sticky... I fancied Workington to do all right. You know, Jonty Gawley's a nice fella, and they did really well in League One last season, but they seem to have started pretty slow. I mean, you can't really take too much out of the St. Helens game, but they had a good hiding off Barrow.
Rochdale turned them over as well week after, which I'd have expected them to go down to Rochdale. And
yeah, so you know, it's a game that Widnes really ought to be winning.
Yeah, I totally agree. I share the same sentiment over Workington. Obviously, John Tegoli, and they secured a lot of them Australian players who, you know, left Whitehaven, Lucas Castle being one. They got Galea there. Obviously, Will Evans has gone home now, but Jake Carter, they got a lot of the better Cumbrian players who tend to move around with a sprinkling of overseas signings. So yeah, I was expecting them to be a bit more, show a bit more resilience than what they what they have, to be honest. But as for witness, I think there needs to just be a bit of ruthlessness for me. You know, these are the type of games for Widnes where, you know, I'm not sat here saying that Widnes, you know, it's a walkover and Widnes should win by a certain amount of points, but Widnes have demonstrated what we're capable of against Leeds Rhinos. Now, this is the type of game in time past, Widnes will go up and you might scrape a result and win, but you won't look convincing. You'll just do enough. You'll stay in third gear. I think if you're going to put markers down in this league, which ultimately you're going to have to do as the season progresses, you know, you need to go up there and look convincing and, you know, and go up with a bit of, not arrogance, but confidence of, you know, we're the better team here. And if we stick to our structures complete well, you know, we can open the game up. I'm not sure whether we'll see a bit of rotation. I reckon Tom Gilmore will play personally. I think he deserves to play. And I think everybody's really interested to see what that partnership with Jordan Abtul could potentially look like, because I think one of my criticisms coming out of that Leeds game was when Joe Lyons had the ball, a couple of loose passes, and, you know, I did question at times his pass selection, and, you know, it did look like we was running with one half back at times. So I'd like to see Tom get a game.
Yeah, I like to say, I think there's a few players who may get a run, but Widnes have got to take the game seriously. I know you're probably thinking, don't take a risk on any injured players. Pitch will probably be pretty heavy up there, given the weather. And you've got quite a big game the following week away at Oldham, which is now going to be played at Staley Bridge. So we don't play at Boundary Park again. Widnes played at Sedgley Park last year. Staley Bridge is slightly more... Widnes have played at Staley Bridge in recent years. I think it was the first game of the season 1 year. It was I'm sure we played there with the Canberra Raiders green kit on, I think.
Yeah.
The Oldham game. But Widnes ought to have one eye on that game as well, because that's the sort of game that's going to define some of the things we talked about before and the success.
Yeah, and I think for me, I'd like to see Jack Outon play on Sunday. Obviously, you know, we lost Danny Lantry, so he'll probably naturally slot in on that bench and, you know, Adam Lawton play in a different role, Morgan McWhirter in a different role than what we would have expected prior to the Leeds game before that injury happened. Maybe Kieran Taylor would get a run out, because I think what you've got to consider as well coming off that, obviously, we've had a rather longer break with the game being on Saturday, with Leeds got an extra day recovery, but then finishing Sunday tea time, you know, Friday, it's a short turnaround, isn't it? So you lose a training session. So that means you lose a recovery session, because you've got to still get your field practice in. So I reckon there might be a little bit of tinkering up at Workington, but, you know, like you say, you can't be taking any chances, and Widnes needs to be going up there looking to put a statement performance in and come away with the 2 points convincingly.
Yep, sadly I won't be there because, usually you do go away with my in-laws to the Lake District on this weekend in February every year, the February half term, but in their infinite wisdom, they'd booked Anglesey this year. So it would have actually worked perfectly. I would have always missed this weekend's game unless it was in the Lake District. And when it came up that Widnes were playing Workington away, I thought all my Christmases had come at once. And then that's when I was reminded that they'd booked Anglesey this year. So the only year in the last 5 years that we've not been going to the Lake District this weekend, Widnes just happened to be playing there. So
maybe come full-time, mate. They might have booked Anglesey with hindsight, with your sanity in mind. But we'll see.
Maybe there is that. So, yeah, well, enjoy the match if you're going. And me and Mike there'll be a different podcast episode next week. And then me and Mike will return the following week to discuss what will be in the Oldham game. The game's coming thick and fast now, as we like. Please do leave your comments on the Widnes Rugby League fans Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. Any suggestions, what you want to hear from the podcast moving forward. do check out the website too, witnessrugby.com. Mike's doing plenty of good work on there, and we'll have a piece about the North Stand opening too. But as always, from myself and Mike, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.